Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Trish Halpin.
And I'm Lorraine Candy.
Welcome to Postcards from Midlife, the show where we help you through the midlife, the menopause, motherhood, and everything in between. This week, we're going to be tackling all our menopausal and midlife skin complaints with dermatologist Dr. Sam Bunting. It's not that we want to look younger, we just want to look better and a bit more glowy and possibly not get quite a shock every time we look in the mirror.
And later on in this episode, we're also going to be talking about one of our favourite subjects, food, and how it plays out in the family dynamic. But first, we're going to talk about Mother's Day.
It is the day.
It's the day. If you have downloaded this on the day that it's come out, which is Sunday, the 22nd of March, it's Mother's Day. So, Lorraine, Mother's Day, what does it mean to you?
I like to lie in bed. I do not like breakfast.
Oh,
bed.
No,
that
never.
Really annoys
no,
me.
No crumbs in the bed.
Everywhere. But I like to think of it as a day where I've got sort of no plans. It's a difficult day, isn't it, Mother's Day? I've had some terrible Mother's Day presents among those four.
Oh, bless them.
Children, bless them.
Yeah.
I think the little pottery thing that was full of old insects was was a low
okay.
point.
Old insects, right.
I once got a self help book.
Oh.
One of them. Yeah, be happy.
Trying to tell you something.
All about.
Oh.
And then also, I did get a card one year from Mabel. She's nine now, nearly nine now. But I think she must have been four or five, and it said to a lovely woman.
Did she draw it herself? Was it a homemade?
Well, yeah, it was a homemade one, but it said to a lovely woman. And I thought, that's funny. Has she heard me described as that? Is that how she describes me to other people? I'd quite like the word mum in it somewhere.
Yeah.
But we have quite a downward pressure from us in our house because my husband's mum, who is a bit of a matriarch, wonderful. She's everyone's favourite grandmother, Grandma Prue. She does like a card, a Mother's Day card, but she likes a card from the grandchildren as well.
Oh, right. Okay.
She likes a card from everyone, possibly our neighbours, everybody. She likes a Mother's Day
card. Her role as being a mum has been very important to her.
It clearly. She's the matriarch. Yeah. It's like she's a bit like a mafia don. She's kind of in charge of the whole family and all our comings and goings, which is wonderful because she's very interested in all our... I mean, who, for God's sake, would be? But she is. And as my eldest daughter always says, is, oh, Grandma's my favourite relative. And that includes me, obviously, in that. But yes, we have to get the card. There has to be flowers delivered. And obviously that becomes my job.
Of course. She's not even your mum, but that's how it goes.
What happens to you on Mother's Day, Trish?
It's a bit different. It's a bit of a double-edged sword for me because obviously my mum passed away 16 years ago now. So in those very early days, I remember the first Mother's Day was particularly hard because it was the first time that I was a mother as well.
Yeah.
So I was kind of being celebrated as a mother, but also very much mourning the loss of my mother about 2 months before. So it was a really hard one. But I think obviously as the years have gone by and those lovely little presents keep coming your way, the ones I particularly like are the ones that they buy from the Mother's Day stall at school, which is usually everybody's awful, dreadful things
they don't
found
want
the back
anymore.
Of their and they just
Trots
sort of
them and jetsam of life delivered as a
cycle their way around Wandsworth of a strange sort of necklaces and beads and things like that. But I did get my lovely boy once got me what he called Turkey Delight, a little box of Turkish delight from the Mother's Day store. So to this day we call it Turkey Delight, which is
adorable.
I just think it's really sweet. So my best hope really is that I get downstairs and there's a few cards and maybe a present on the table. But that's
remembered,
but probably nudged by my husband, so I'm not sure how much of it is spontaneous, but that's the part of being a mum, isn't it? You just have to, you know, unconditional love It just, you know, you just
got to be very patient with it.
Exactly.
And do you miss your mum on Mother's Day? Do you particularly Mother's Day?
Yeah. Well, no, I miss her all the time, actually. Yeah. She pops into my head at all sorts of different times and for different reasons. But it is Mother's. Yeah, I suppose I do. And I think my big thing is that she never met my daughter. And
yes, because you were pregnant, weren't you? You were due to give birth and she died just very shortly before.
Yeah, just before. But, you know, one of the things she said was, I can die happy knowing you're going to have children, which is awesome. Like, even now it makes me feel.
It's a lovely message.
Yes, that is. Yes, exactly. Just my memories of her. That's good.
Well, we want everyone to have a wonderful Mother's Day today. So it's time to meet our guest today, dermatologist Dr. Sam Bunting.
So welcome, Sam, to this episode of Postcards from Midlife. We're going to jump straight in and just say, where has all our collagen gone? What happens at this age? Well, why do our faces get thinner and a bit sort of
drier, wrinklier, and it just feels less plumped?
Yeah.
Can I say plumped?
You can. That's a good word.
But
I think it's a nice word. What's going on, Sam?
So we know that estrogen affects just about every cell in your skin, top layer and bottom layer, and its relative decline slowly, insidiously, just means that the collagen factories get switched off. So we estimate that you lose about 30% in the first 5 years of menopause, which is quite, you know, that's basically your skin thickness.
Think you mean, what we mean is perimenopause, yes, don't we? Yes. So probably after the age of about 40, would you say?
Well, I think the data relates to the onset of menopause, so 5 years. So I guess the average age of menopause, by mid-50s, you're probably looking at your skin being about a third of the thickness it was in your 20s.
Mm. Right. What can I put on that? Can I eat anything? Can Trish do any magic? Is there any way of bringing any of it back?
Well, I think that the key thing is the habits that prevent the decline, and then thinking about skincare habits that bolster what you've got. So I think clearly we need to be using sunscreen every day. I'm like a broken record on this topic, but it is something that we must all do before we do anything else and spend money.
Under moisturiser.
Yes, your outermost layer before you put your makeup
and
on.
Even when it's cloudy.
Even when,
in the winter,
365. Because we're talking about the UVA rays that don't burn, they age, they go deeper into the skin, and they also take out your elasticity in the elastin part of your skin. So there's two key components of skin health. So we really want to protect those at all costs.
Okay, so you do that.
Yep.
Put your moisturiser on.
Yep.
Do I drink more water? Do I do more exercise? Do I massage my face?
There's a lot of trending of facial yoga and the likes right now. Generally speaking, Marble. Our muscles are in good shape. It's really the skin over the top of the muscles that we have to look at. So I think that in terms of what you eat, you want to be hanging on to your collagen. So that means, you know, relatively low GI foods.
What's that mean, GI?
So foods that would make your insulin levels spike are best avoided. So go, you know, brown rice rather than white.
You're saying no sugar, aren't you?
I'm telling you to moderate it. It's dull.
Alcohol.
Eat your vegetables. Lots and lots of colours. Micronutrients from nuts, things that are nutritionally dense like that are great.
If you are getting more extreme symptoms like very dry skin, what other things can happen? Because, I mean, we're talking a little bit about cosmetic. We want to look nicer. But there are things that are really quite painful and difficult when you get to sort of 45 plus, aren't there, skin-wise? Because your skin does change.
Well, I think problems can erupt and get worse. So rosacea, for instance, is something that can often get much worse.
What is rosacea?
Rosacea
sounds redness. Lovely.
I know. 1 in 10 of us in the Northern Hemisphere are affected by the genes. But basically, it's where you get redness, often in response to environmental triggers like sunshine or going out from being in the cold into a warm room. So the skin flushes up. Can often be accompanied by spots in the kind of mid-face, broken capillaries, that sort of thing. It can get worse because barrier dysfunction is part and parcel of it. So if you make the skin drier with lower levels of estrogen, it can cause it to trigger and flare. And skincare, particularly using the wrong sorts of skincare products like foaming cleansers or exfoliants and brushes, this sort of thing can again compound that. And so much of that is kind of trending in skincare right now. We have to be really careful about what we use in our skin, I think, as hormones change.
I didn't know rosacea was genetic. Oh, it's genetic.
Most inflammatory skin problems have a strong genetic component. I mean, if you've got a severe, a relatively severe acne, you're much more likely to get acne yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Eczema is the same. Mm-hmm. So these things, are, all of them can be challenged by changing.
So you shouldn't really say, oh my God, I've got to change everything. My skin's changed. I've got to start exfoliating. I've got to do all of this. What is a calm response to a changing midlife skin?
So I think first thing's always to do no harm, to get rid of the things that might aggravate your skin's tendency to get drier. Bear in mind that acne proneness can develop because you've got a
I've got a friend with terrible midlife acne, just come from
oftentimes
nowhere.
Oftentimes for the first time they've ever had, and they're not sure at all because really the skincare market doesn't really address that particular need, I don't think, not terribly well anyway. Mm. So you really have to sort of take out the kind of the unguents which might clog pores.
Unguents.
So I think you have to look for the word non-comedogenic.
Non-what?
I can't say that.
Comedogenic. It just means non-pore blocking.
Does it? Will it say that on the label, it, do you
if
think?
It, if the range has been formulated with that kind of thing in mind, then it should do.
And would you advise a trip to a dermatologist if you've got extreme issues with your skin? And how do you find one?
Well, I think the key thing is what level of problems are you having? How much is it bothering you? I mean, dry skin alone can be enough of a reason. But if you're breaking out or your rosacea is getting worse, then I would 100% say the quickest route to a calm and considered complexion will be using prescription agents. And somebody who's specifically interested in that space, and I think cosmetic dermatology is something that in the UK people are becoming more and more aware of. It's quite London-centric, I suppose. But I think that there are more and more dermatologists who are also conscious of the cosmetic end.
Do they have to have a safety stamp? Is there a thing that will say this dermatologist is not a lunatic that's going to charge you thousands of pounds? Is there a kind of guidance to who you would pick?
I think that you can have good advice in terms of the prescription items, but you really need a holistic view in terms of your habits, because I think medicine isn't always compatible with beauty. So I think that's something that you learn about by somebody by reputation, and perhaps what they, you know, their online presence now. I think it's very easy really to research.
Check them out.
Someone's approach. And I think because there are dermatologists that specialise in skin cancer, that might not be the best person to prescribe treatment for your rosacea.
No.
Do you know what I mean? Just because
dream
it's...
Dream course.
You know, it's quite a lot of specialisation nowadays. So. Mm-hmm.
And in terms of the steps you would do every morning with a more drier, because dry, I think, Trish, dry is the main thing, isn't it, for midlife skin. What's your three-step advice first thing in the morning?
So I think...
Glass of champagne.
That would be delightful.
Glass of champagne, yeah.
A non-foaming cleanser. I think that's key. I think not using overly hot water or using anything rougher than your fingertips to cleanse with. So no, I would tend to avoid flannels, and also that sort of like tendency to kind of scrub with the towel, however satisfying
Dab
that might feel. Patting is best, absolutely. Then you want moisturiser, then you want sunscreen. And then if you could do a little extra, then it would be an antioxidant serum to give you a little bit extra on top of the UV protection that you're getting from your sunscreen. But a full spectrum sunscreen, so not just a little bit of SPF in your tinted moisturiser, please.
Can I go back to some other little problems? One that I feel that I have is pigmentation. And obviously that's from kind of just being this age and being exposed to sun at certain times. What can I do about that? So which is sort of brown spots and things on my face.
I think you can definitely start with skincare. And I think, again, that's where perhaps prescription skincare might have a bit more oomph than over-the-counter. But AHAs, which will help exfoliate the top layer, are useful. Retinoids, which you use at night, stimulate all kinds of great things in the skin, including an improvement in the evenness of the skin tone. I kind of think anybody entering menopause should be thinking about a retinoid just because they do so much.
Yeah.
It's the most powerful kind of category of drugs that we know.
What is it doing to you when you put it on?
Well, I mean, it just basically makes your skin behave like it used to. It switches on the collagen factory, which we really want. It improves the turnover of the top layer.
Yay for retinol.
And it improves pigmentation. So there isn't much in the way of skin function that it doesn't affect. And of course, there are different levels depending on. You can start very gently with over-the-counter, and then you can build up to prescription Retin-A, which is considered the gold standard, and also quite good for acne, which is a rather nice secondary thing.
And in terms of sort of these non-invasive treatments, are you an advocate of things like, I think it's everything from like microneedling to laser treatments, those kind of things for skin? Because somebody did recommend me having some kind of laser thing on some of these splodgy, dark pigmentation spots.
I think with skin, there are lots of routes to achieving the same outcome. Some want to go fast, others want to go in a more slow, considered way and have control themselves. But laser 100% can help improve the appearance of sunspots from chronic sun exposure. Things like melasma, which can be related to sun exposure, but also hormones, are often better treated medically.
And that, I think I've heard of that. That's like a big brown splodge that you might get. Is that, or discoloration?
Associated with pregnancy. It's right. A mask-like appearance, but it can occur at any age and it can come and go as well. So that is often best treated with medical treatments, a prescription-grade treatment for pigmentation. Mm-hmm. So as I say, I think there's lots of different tools. I think microneedling is an excellent treatment for those who perhaps aren't
It's
best used in somebody who's already been using a retinoid, so their fibroblasts are switched on and ready to make more collagen. And then you're basically using needles to create controlled injury in the skin, which sort of regenerates.
Repair it. Oh, I see.
Yeah, it's quite powerful without really having much downtime. So a bit of redness for a weekend is kind of, you know, the worst case scenario.
Painful? Sounds quite painful.
We use topical anaesthetic. It's actually quite a relaxing procedure for me and the patient.
I'll do it to you later.
Get your needles out. Do a little...
Book a room.
Stabbing. Now, other areas, things like saggy jowls. I think that's another
thing. The old
saggy
you
jowl.
Use the jawline.
Yes, the definition around the jawline.
The polar neck gets higher.
And because it covers the crepey neck as well.
Crepey neck, yeah.
And distracts from the jowl.
Yeah, I mean, the lower face has become more of an issue as we've gotten better at treating the upper face. So with Botox, I think, that side of things, sort of frowning and forehead lines and crow's feet have been kind of improved. So, of course, then the focus shifts slower. But it's harder because, comes back to our friend elastin, once you lose your elastin...
You can't do it with anything, can you?
Well, that is why filling occurs, to kind of tent pull this slightly looser skin by creating a sort of a propping up of the midface.
Yeah.
That sounds really basic, but it's kind of what we're doing. And you're also losing fat at the same time. You're losing a little bit of bone as we age. You know, there's a whole complex degree of changes happening underneath the skin. So it is about choosing, I guess, the right procedure level, because these things tend to work best, you know, sort of in conjunction with other treatments. A little bit of Botox if you've got muscles pulling down the corners of your mouth and pebbling your chin, a little bit of filler along the jawline, a little bit of filler in midface. These
There's
are the
so
options
much
they're out
can
there.
Do.
Yeah. I mean, I think the key thing is to find someone who's on the same page as you aesthetically, who goes as slow or as quickly as you want to go. And I think that's the great thing about the cosmetic world now, is lots of different practitioners
but a lot,
with different approaches.
Quite a lot of scary yes. images out there of certain maybe celebrities.
Because
or,
I suppose as you get older, there is an acceptance. And I think it's about looking better, not younger. There is an acceptance that your face is going to change. You are going to lose the bits that were your youthful bits. So I guess you've mentally got to get your head around that a bit. Do you see a lot of women who talk to you emotionally about how their skin is changing? So I guess when you're having kind of consultations with people, you must get a lot of insight into how women, what it feels like to look older when you look in the mirror, because we don't all want to look younger, but we do want to look healthy and less grumpy as well.
I think that last point is key. It's the emotional dissonance. It's looking in the mirror and maybe you look cross or frustrated when that's not how you feel inside, just because
the
lines
are causing it.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think for me, I would definitely say I'm at the less invasive end of the spectrum cosmetically, but I really believe in treatments that really boost that inner emotional confidence and strength at a challenging time for some. So I think helping people get their skincare right first and foremost is usually the right step, because that builds trust. And if you can really make a big difference to skin quality, it can be surprising how much less that little bit of sagging or that little frown line actually matters, because what people see is radiance first. I really believe in that 100%.
I didn't do this. Should you have gone out into the sun with absolutely no sunscreen on as a teenager? And thought, well, this is brilliant, I'll go red and then I'll go brown, it'll be amazing. Should you have done that? Is that repairable, or is that going to affect your midlife face?
I think it's rare that a single event will ruin your skin. I do see girls who've used a lot of sunbeds in their teens in quite a intense way. I think that I've seen early 20s with crow's feet from,
oh dear.
You can see the elastin damage in the under eye tissue.
So bad.
And that's hard to repair. I think collagen-related problems you can probably work on. And then with good behaviour, the skin has remarkable repair capacity at any age, actually. But I think elastin, you really have to protect that.
And should we be saying to our teenage... I've got three girls. Should we be saying to our teenage daughters, sunscreen before you even get out of bed, and wash your face, don't make it... Should we be giving them the same kind of advice? What do we tell our teenage girls? Because they kind of always look to you, to mum, for advice on it. And I'm
and then
very...
they ignore you.
Yeah, well, then they
do the opposite.
Yes. But I always think I should be able... This, you know, working in fashion and beauty, I should be able to give them the advice. What do I tell the girls?
I think getting the basics right is fundamental, just like it is for your wardrobe. I think if you cleanse correctly and, you know, I think we have to be careful with trends. There's so many new trends.
Exactly.
And beauty on Instagram is just such a compelling, you know.
Well, they're getting bombarded by all of these messages every day.
So I think if you have that key core structure, I think everybody should have a cleanser, a moisturiser and a good quality sunscreen that doesn't break teens out. I think that's really key. I think you can almost, much like I have to do with my adult population, you have to reframe sunscreen as something that can either be a primer or, you know, a radiance booster or some other asset. But, you know, you're kind of tricking them into using the sunscreen every day in an ideal world.
One thing that I've noticed with my teens and their friends is they're quite self-conscious about pore size. That seems to be... Is that specific?
I think that's an
teenagers?
Instagram thing, though.
Oh, is it? Right.
I just think we're so now used to looking at images that have been face-tuned and every... I don't know a girl who doesn't worry about her pores. I don't think it's just a teen phenomenon.
But I've seen them with these things they stick on their nose and then they pull it off.
Well, I think we, I mean, those have always been quite keen.
Blackheads. Are they quite good, those things? Because I worry about those and think, oh God, that looks a bit harsh.
It's just it's a hormonal thing. You know, once the oil switches on at puberty, you tend to get some comedone formation. They tend to be blackheads around the nose. Mm. I mean, I think the same ingredients. So I think it's about non-clogging skincare. So that word, non-comedogenic again. I mean, I really think all skincare should be non-clogging. It's part of our brand philosophy, just to be sure that we're not actually doing any harm, no matter what age you are, because anybody can be pushed to break out if they put enough coconut oil or whatever. So there's some ingredients that are particularly prone to clogging up skin. And I see that more and more with these more and more complex skincare routines. Lots of layering of ingredients that have just not been well thought out and certainly were never designed to be applied.
It's the Korean thing, isn't it? Where they have something like 17 steps in a skincare process.
One of mine goes into the bathroom. She's probably in there an hour in the evening doing her face. I said, what are you doing to your face?
What's your beautiful, lovely face?
Please don't touch it. Stop poking it. Yeah.
I've got one more little thing, which is dark circles. I mean, what is causing those? How do we get rid of them? I think obviously good night's sleep seems
dark
to...
Dark thoughts.
Yeah,
dark thoughts.
Is it alcohol?
Not enough red wine, I'd say.
Is it something to do with your kidneys? Flushing things out? I don't know.
Self-diagnosing?
I am. I don't know. I should know. I don't know these things.
You've been Googling, haven't you?
No, I think... So think about the skin around your eyes and the structures underneath are muscles and blood vessels. So it's a bit like wearing a dark bra under a white T-shirt. The thicker the T-shirt, the less visible the bra. So that's why you want thick, robust skin around your eyes that doesn't reveal the bluey structures underneath. So as your skin thins... As the T-shirt thins, the bra becomes more visible.
Oh no.
You see what I'm saying?
My bra's quite visible.
So you want nice, thick skin. The keys to thick skin, boring, sunglasses, sun avoidance, sunscreen around the eyes. I'm really quite evangelical. No one puts sunscreen around their eyes. But it's really these small habits that you implement every day.
Too late for us. 14,
no, skin things. Never loses its ability to repair if you give it the right stuff. So vitamins A, B and C, so... your retinoid, your vitamin C in the morning, bit of niacinamide, vitamin B3, and sunscreen.
Ah, so those
four
are
things.
Can keep repairing. It can keep
100%.
Oh, good. Right, I'm on it. And I can't sleep down on my face. You told me that once.
Selfish,
I remember you
starfish.
Saying, stop sleeping on your face because it makes it all...
smush lines are hard because, you know...
Smush lines.
That's what I call them. You know what I mean?
I do.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know,
it's a bit like that.
Chest as well.
You look in the mirror, don't you, in the morning, and you think, what the hell has happened overnight? And I think, I've been face down. That's what's happened. Pillow all over
selfish
me.
Selfish starfish.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Sam. I'm going to go out. I'm going to put sun cream on. I'm going to start sleeping on my back. I'm going to reduce my sugar levels. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to do that.
And Sam, you've got a very exciting range of products as well. Dr. Sam's, is that right?
Yes. Yeah. Very fond. Brilliant.
And it's very well priced, actually, because I think there's a lot of spendy stuff in the market, which some of it, which is very, very good, but there's a lot of stuff slightly playing on that vulnerability of women of this age group, and I think it's better, not younger, that we're looking for, isn't it? So keeping good price points is useful for us.
Well, the direct-to-consumer model helps with that, so you really do invest in what's in the pot. We kept the packaging really nice and clean, and I think it appeals to all ages. And the ingredient story is actually incredibly versatile, and we've played with textures to make sure they still felt indulgent, because I really feel that's what's missing for those who are perhaps blemish prone. And if you're a 50-something blemish prone for the first time in your life, you know, the aisles of boots with Clearasil and the like just don't really appeal.
Don't want that in your cupboard.
They're not formulated for that skin type either, because it really is a delicate balance of managing drier skin with a more delicate barrier, but also breakouts. So, yeah.
Well done.
Thank you
very much. Thanks.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So now we've reached the point in this podcast where we normally talk about things going on in our family and with our teenagers. And this week we wanted to talk about food, because it is quite a complex situation, or can be quite a complex situation within families. And Lorraine, I was telling you how much I'm kind of finding cooking pleasurable again.
Yes, I've come to midlife and turned into Delia.
No, Anna Jones, Ottolenghi. The modern cook, or Ottolenghi, any of those. Mira Soda. I love all these sort of new range of fabulous modern cooks doing a lot of vegetarian food. And I think I stopped enjoying cooking food because it became such a sort of tricky and emotive issue in our house pretty much since our kids were small, because they just wouldn't eat anything that I made for them, you know, anything healthy. And it just felt like this constant battle. And I tried so many different things. And I think it's one of those things that makes you feel like a rubbish mother or parent, is when you can't feed your children. It's exhausting. Yeah.
And constantly having to think, what am I going to feed them? This emotional labour of thinking, oh, well, they had that yesterday. They can't have spaghetti bolognese every day. They can't have pasta and butter.
We're literally like their personal nutritionists, aren't we? Trying to kind of give them a balanced diet. But I've just decided now that they're the age they are, they're 16, the twins, I've just sort of given in and accepted that my son's only going to eat beige food. I mean, if that's saying
it's
you
complex.
Are what you eat, he would be a fried egg bap with ketchup, I would say.
Would he?
Yes. What?
My eldest would be a large sourdough loaf. Yes,
just on its own.
Italian pasta. She does like a sourdough. She loves a really nice
dipped in a bit of balsamic and olive oil.
No,
just dry.
She likes bread. She loves a good cup of tea, big cup of builder's tea, and a nice bit of toast.
Oh, I quite like that. Yeah, that's quite
nice. But it is complex, because you do get very stressful, I think, as a parent, particularly when you've got lots of children, of giving them the right food. You're swayed by everything that's healthy, not healthy, what's got a good carbon footprint nowadays. And I think sometimes we overthink it. I feel a little bit guilty as a working mother. I think if I can't feed them and I've not been there, and we have childcare after school, or we had a nanny before they were born, when they were born, you're just constantly thinking, well, the least I can do is feed them. Mm, I can feed my children. I can come home and I can do that, and it's a proof of my love. So it gets quite tied up, I think, in all the complex ways we think about food and from our childhood.
I know, because I think as well for me, it comes from, obviously as mothers, it's our primal urge to nurture and take care of our children. And my twins were tiny when they were born. They were like 4.5 pounds. They were these tiny little scraps of things. And trying to get food in them was literally, that's all I can think about from those days, is just trying to get feed with milk in them that they didn't sort of then puke up all over their baby.
And it's an hourly stress.
Oh my goodness, it really was. Yeah. And I remember that the doctor saying, well, they've probably got the stomach is the size of a walnut. It's tiny. So you just had to keep feeding them. And it was exhausting. So it's probably a little bit of leftover from that as
and
well.
And I think from my background, my mum didn't really cook. She was a stay at home, but she didn't wasn't into cooking. Just wasn't her thing. And then we were hit, I think, when we first had kids with all of this Annabelle Carmel, you've got to be able to make stuff. You've got to know. I mean, I
could, freezing ice cubes of smashed
I just
broccoli.
And could all of that completely overwhelm me because I can't cook. I'm not really interested in it. It's not one of the things that I don't really know much about food, and you can't go out and spend loads of money on weird vegetables you've never heard of. I mean, I don't think I'd ever had a blueberry till we had the kids, because I thought we'd better get stuff like that in the house. It seems to be in all these
colourful
books.
Foods.
Yes, what's a sweet potato, for Christ's sake? So I think you get a bit worked up and overwhelmed by it, don't you? My teenagers now, my two eldest, are actually really good cooks. Because we used to do a lot of baking together when they were little. And I really enjoyed that because it didn't really matter what it turned out like. And we make the little fairy cakes and things. And then also I've interviewed hundreds of experts now for the column in the Sunday Times. And the main bit of advice I would say, if anyone said to me, can you give me one bit of parenting advice based on the experts you've talked to? I would say, eat meals together. Sitting down and eating together is really, really healthy. It's healthy for their neurology. It's healthy physically. It's healthy for them emotionally. We do it on a Sunday and on a Friday. And they're kind of, you have to have a very good excuse not to be in that place in our family. And I think bringing other kids in as well. There is a tendency with the screens and everything for people to separate out and eat their meals whenever they want, but you've got to eat at least two meals together. It's really bonding.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's hope there's going to be a nice surprise Mother's Day meal today.
Yes. And I'm not cooking it, because then it'll be edible.
Wishful thinking. So what's changed my world this week? I think this might be quite a biggie, quite a big decision that I've come to having done this podcast series, actually, and having spoken to Dr. Shazadi Harper, Professor Michael Baum. I've actually decided I am going to go on HRT.
Wow.
Yes, I have made the decision. So I have started. Obviously, my concern was around the fact that my mother had breast cancer, but obviously dispelled of the myths, and now armed with the facts.
Of other things is so much greater.
Exactly. So I have made that decision. So I will report back in another episode
on
how that's going for me. What I'm trying this week is I'm doing that thing. I'm trying not to compare myself to other people because I had a bit of house envy.
You've not been comparing yourself to J-Lo then, have you?
not quite that bad.
Butt's not that pert.
No, I had a bit of house envy the other day. And I just thought, you know what, I'm going to just practice that little mantra, that little self-talk saying...
What house envy?
Oh, someone who's having a massive big basement done and this, that and the other. And I just like...
Silliness.
I just come out of my like scuffed, scruffy hallway covered in dog and children marks. And I just thought, oh, whatever. But anyway, I'm going to not compare myself to other people. I'm going to compare myself to who I was yesterday. Have you heard that one? Compare yourself to who you were yesterday.
Who were you yesterday?
Well, that's a good question. Well, hopefully the idea of that obviously is
Cher yesterday?
Well, it wasn't J-Lo, put it like that. It wasn't J-Lo, but it might could have been Cher. And then finally, my nostalgia noodling is wine related. We talk about wine. I was thinking about my first glass of wine, which I think was
the morning or what? yesterday?
Back in the 80s. Glass of Liebfraumilch, Blue Nun. Do you remember that?
It was so sweet. But quite a nice
long, thin,
visually pleasant bottle.
Nun in a blue outfit.
Yes.
But that was my first.
That's because you're a good Catholic girl.
Oh, yeah, probably. I've got an aunt who's a nun. She's fabulous.
Have
she did
you?
Wear a blue
What's
habit.
What's her name?
Auntie Maura.
Auntie
Maura. Love Auntie Maura. But was I have it on...
Nun?
She was at one point.
That sounds like a dodgy film, yeah, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah.
But anyway, height of sophistication, obviously. Mm. And I have it on good authority that actually one of the Spice Girls used to have that on her rider, Bottle of Blue Nun.
I know who that is.
Yeah.
I'm not saying.
We're not saying.
But
we're
I
not
see
saying.
Nothing wrong with it. Jolly impressed.
I might go and try and find a bottle, actually.
Yeah.
And what about you? What's changed your life?
Well, what has changed my life this week has been clothes swapping.
Oh, okay.
Now, bear with me.
Not with me.
No,
we haven't done that yet.
But we are the same size. Mm. It's an entirely doable thing. My daughter, 16-year-old daughter, sometimes I'll say to her, where's that T-shirt from? And she'll say, oh, it's Maddie's. And I'll say, you mustn't keep taking people's clothes. But it's that's not what's happening. It's official. What is happening is they leave their stuff all over the floor and they just, when they're bored of their own stuff, they just pick up off someone else's floor and they kind of swap it around.
Is it being on the floor is the code for you can take this?
I think that's the lazy teenage version of what could be quite a good thing where you get to the end of a couple of months and think, well, I'm just a little bit bored of this T-shirt, this shirt or whatever. But Trisha's got quite a nice one.
Oh.
She might be bored.
Oh, you've got your eye on mine.
Got your eye on that little Chanel blouse you bought in the sale. That's what I've got my eye on.
In my dreams.
Trish,
in my dreams. In my dreams.
So this week, I'm trying. It's probably very trying for her. I've made a new friend.
Really?
A midlife friend.
Oh, I'm jealous.
I love her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's very nice. She doesn't know all my background. Mm. Doesn't know anything about the past. It's completely a clean begin again friendship. We just have really nice little chats about things, and I've probably only known her 6 weeks.
Oh,
something like that.
Does she know you're her friend?
No, we're a little bit bemused because we've made friends with each other. And, we have a nice little WhatsApp thing going. And when I popped round to see her, I took a book because I thought she would like that. And that was weird because she had a book to give me. That she thought
how
I
did
would
you
like.
Meet her?
She is yoga.
Oh, a yoga friend.
You know how I disagree with yoga on every level, but actually, weirdly, it's brought me many things. I can touch my toes and I have a new friend.
And you can do a headstand.
I can do a headstand.
Good.
Now. Yeah, it's good
for you.
So I've been nostalgia noodling in a big way this week.
Okay. Trip down memory
25
lane.
Years ago, which album do you think we would have been listening to?
Oh, my
loving?
God.
Jagged Little
Pill. Little Pill. Oh,
Alanis Morissette. So she's going on tour.
Oh.
On tour, 45, just had a baby called Winter, her third baby. So midlife Alanis is out there for me to go and see. I'm going to go and see. You're going to come with me.
Definitely.
It'd be amazing, wouldn't
Can
it?
I come with you?
Yeah, we
you
know
can't
all
bring
the
your
words.
Other friend, though.
I can't bring my yoga friend, no. All right, Trish. Thank you very much for listening to Postcards from Midlife this week. If you would like to rate and review us, turn to whichever app you subscribe through and leave us a review.
See you next week.
Goodbye. Bye.